The Joe Mason Show is on in five, four, three, two, one.
Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. Today we're going to do a full hour of nothing but baseball. Coming up later on, Mark Berman will be here to talk about the New York Mets, Ike Davis, Lucas Duda, Ruben Tejada, and the rest of the New York Mets, followed by Rush Olson and I will be resuming what we did from yesterday. We'll be finishing off the top pitching rotations in baseball, the top starting rotations in baseball. But up first, to take a closer look at the Oakland A's starting rotation, and we're going to give you a couple names that you might not have heard of who could play major roles with the Oakland A's this season. Please welcome from AthleticsNation.com, Alex Hall to the show. Alex, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
The A's added a new savory flavor to their pitching staff, but they made sure to wait until just after Bartolo Colon had left to do it.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? They have a brand new dude. Joe Savory was just picked up from the Philadelphia Phillies off waivers, and he is now in camp. What do you know about Joe Savory?
Well, I know we're going to talk mostly about starting pitching today, and that's not where Savory is going to be. But it is where he used to be. He came up as a starting pitcher with the Phillies, but it just kind of wasn't working out for him. He wasn't getting he was a pretty top prospect. He was he was a first round pick. He was a first round pick, but he just never cut it as a starter in the minor leagues. At one point, they actually toyed with making him a hitter, and he was actually pretty good. He's a 290 career hitter with a few home runs in his minor league career. But what happened a couple of years ago, around 2011, and there's actually an interesting interview with Brandon Moss a couple days ago on the San Francisco Chronicle, because he was in the Phillies minor league system with Savory at the time. He had almost given up being a starter, and they were trying him as a hitter. And then it reminds me of Sean Doolittle a little bit. They brought Savory out of the bullpen one time to try him out, and they found that pitching in the shorter stint, he was able to get his velocity up over 90 miles an hour, whereas he'd been in the low to mid 80s as a starter, which wasn't very effective. So suddenly, and this has happened to so many guys through history, when you don't have to throw 100 pitches anymore and you only have to throw 10 or 20, you can dial it up. And by throwing so much harder, Savory was able to turn himself into a pretty solid reliever. And you can see where his numbers take off when he starts becoming a short pitcher like this. He's starting to strike out 10 batters per 9 innings with this extra velocity. The walks are a little bit high, but whatever. There's something to work with is the point. But most importantly about Savory is he has an option remaining. And what that means is he has one more year where his team can send him down to the minors and bring him back up, back and forth, willy-nilly, without having to worry about it. The rest of Oakland's bullpen, pretty much, guys like Fernando Abad and Jesse Chavez, who are on the bubble of making the team or not, don't have options left. And if they get demoted off the team, they have to go through waivers, someone else will pick them up, and they'll be gone. So that's the difference between a guy having an option or being out of options. The A's couldn't add more guys to the major league bullpen because they'll end up losing someone to another team, one of their out-of-options players. Savory can be stashed down in AAA until the first guy gets hurt. Maybe someone gets hurt on April 2nd. Maybe it's not until June. But the point is, now you've got a capable guy waiting in AAA for the call, because you know you're going to need a reliever. Someone will get hurt throughout the course of the season. Same reason you've got Eric O'Flaherty waiting on the DL. When he comes back, maybe there'll be a spot. So just one more quality player being stashed by Billy Beane for some depth, and so he can make not his 25-man roster, but his 162-game roster.
Yep, sounds interesting. Now, the starting rotation, though, is going to be Jared Parker, let's just say probables. Parker, Scott Kazmir, Sonny Gray, A.J. Griffin, and Dan Straley are the five guys that Bob Melvin and the Oakland A's feel are the top five pitchers. Do you agree with any of that? Because I'll tell you what, I really like AJ Griffin, and I like Dan Straley a lot.
Yes, those have got to be the five guys. It would take an act of God to change that. Basically what I mean is that would take an injury or someone under those top five coming into camp with like a new pitch and just, you know, going crazy and throwing perfect games. I mean, those are the five guys going into the season. And we've spoken pretty extensively about those guys over the years. But just like with the 162-game roster I was just talking about with the bullpen, it's the same thing with the starting rotation. And at past fan fest interviews and stuff that we've done, that's actually a term that they've used, is putting together a pitching staff for 162 games, not just a five-man rotation. So the important thing is having depth to that rotation and having more options, because you know one of these guys will go down. Gray had off-season surgery, though it was on his non-pitching hand. Probably doesn't matter. Parker would not have made another playoff start last year if the A's had advanced, because his forearm was getting a little sore. He's already had Tommy John in that arm. You never know. Scott Kazmir, of course, is just a walking injury. You never know when he's going to go down. So you have to think about who else is behind there.
And you know what? They have a couple of guys that people aren't talking about that maybe we need to introduce them to. First guy was acquired in the Texas trade, and that is Josh Lindblom. Now, Lindblom has four pitches. Mainly he throws a fastball around 90, 92 miles an hour. He throws a slider that's pretty wicked. He has a decent curveball, and he also throws a straight changeup. What about Josh Lindblom should we know about other than that?
Well, sure. First, let's get the whole list. Let's get the whole list out there. I've got five guys here who I think are likely to be the Sacramento rotation, which is who you'll be drawing from when you need an extra starter. I think the obvious number six here is Tommy Malone. He's been pitching in Oakland the last couple of years. He's still got an option year left, so he'll be in the minors waiting for an injury. Then you've got Lindblom. You've got Drew Pomeranz, acquired for Brett Anderson over the offseason. You've got Arnold Leon. He's a prospect that's been down in the system for a while. And then you've got a few other names who will fight over a last spot. There's Andrew Werner. He was in Sacramento last year. I don't really see him doing anything with the organization. He's kind of filler right now. I don't see him hopping up the depth chart to make it to the majors at all. Phil Umber was signed this winter. He's famous for throwing a perfect game and really nothing else. He's not been very good. And then Matt Bushman, another journeyman with some interesting numbers in the minors, who could get a shot. But Lindblom, you know, what you said about him, unfortunately, is pretty much what I know. He was acquired just this offseason. He was part of the trade that got the A's Craig Gentry from the Rangers. And he's a guy who the Rangers decided to stretch out into a starter last year. So he's been a reliever in the past, or at least for part of his career. But now he's going to go more, they've got him starting full time. In the minors last year, he seemed pretty decent at it. Now, granted, this was being a little bit old to be in AAA, but, you know, he kept the ERA down around 3. He kept the walks at a reasonable level. The strikeouts are low enough that I don't think they're going to look very good in the majors. But the point is, Lindblom seems to be a guy. He's got the arsenal. Like you say, he's got that slider, which he not only is that by the numbers very clearly his best pitch, he also throws it more than his other secondary pitches. He throws it over a quarter of the time. So more than you're almost guaranteed during your at-bat you're going to get a slider from Lindblom. He's going to at least 1 in 4 pitches. So I don't expect a whole lot from him, but he looks like he's going to be serviceable. He's a guy you can bring up for a couple of spot starts, bring him up for a month when you have a weak spot in the rotation. And he can probably eat a few innings and at least keep you in a game here or there. Unfortunately, like I say, I haven't learned a whole lot about him yet because he wasn't on the team last year, except that the A's absolutely ruined him when he faced Oakland last year. And there's actually an article about that elsewhere that he's going to kind of try to use that. He's going to ask the guys, hey, you guys messed me up when I faced you. How did you do it? What did you do? Which pitch was it? Did I have a tell? What about me were you able to pick up on? And that actually seems like a pretty good strategy. If someone's beaten you, ask them how they do it. Maybe you'll learn how to not fall for it again next time. So, yeah, he seems like a pretty average guy. You know, he throws in the around 90 miles an hour. He's got the four pitches. Nothing spectacular about him, but he's in his mid-20s. He's not too old. Hey, you know, worst guys you could have is depth. I'd rather have him as my number seven starter than my number five starter.
I'll tell you what. One of the things that happened to him was that he was in the Dodgers organization for so long. And, you know, they had pretty decent starting pitching when he first got there. And so he was there. Then they had the trouble that they had in 2010 with the bullpen. And they tried to convert him in AAA to relieve. And that was a difficult thing. They actually had begun it in 2009. But the thing about him is he has pretty good control. And he needs to because he doesn't have the real big gas. And, yeah, he got lit up by the A's. But the A's lit a lot of people up. Especially yeah. Texas Ranger pitchers. They really feasted on that. And that's one thing that I want to caution people on before they throw this kid in the towel or throw this kid in the can is that he is a decent pitcher. He knows what he's doing. And I think in the right circumstance, he can step in and give a good performance here and there. I don't think he's a fifth starter for the Oakland A's, but if he has to be, there's a lot worse options than him. You know, there's... go ahead.
I was going to say, a good way to put it could be when your starter goes down and you bring up your guy from the minors, how do you feel about it? Are you like, oh, crap, we're bringing up that guy? Or are you thinking, oh, that's okay. He seems decent. I'm not, you know, excited about him making a lot of starts, but hey, let's see what happens. I feel the second way about Lindblom. If he had to come and make a start, I'd say, okay, let's see what happens. I wouldn't be worried.
If I was playing fantasy that day and I needed an extra pitcher and he was up, I would take him before some. Because I know what he can do. I know what he can do. Now, we've got only about 3 minutes left, 3.5 minutes left. And I want to talk a little bit about Drew Pomeranz because he's another one. He's a big freaking kid, too. And he's a left-hander. And the thing about him is this, is he throws hard. What was his... velocity last year. He threw really freaking hard from what I've
been told. He's also kind of low to mid-90s. His big thing really is his curveball. He has a big, slow curveball that I have heard very, very good things about. I mean, he's a guy who was not just a first-round pick. He was fifth overall when he was picked. He was a huge prospect. He's been ranked as high as number 30 in all of baseball by Baseball America, but that was before 2012. So that was two winters ago. He was ranked number 24 that same offseason by MLB.com. So this guy has been an elite prospect. He's coming from very, very high ground here. However, he was in Colorado, which is a very, very bad place for a pitcher to develop or be or live or visit or even think about or dream about. You don't want to be around Colorado if you're a pitcher, especially if your thing is having a big breaking ball. What I've heard about Colorado and about Coors Field and that altitude is that it affects the break of the ball and it kind of softens the break. And that's one reason you get the results that you get is hitters fare a little bit better against these flatter breaking balls and the pitchers don't do as well. But then when they go away from the park, the hitters are extra baffled by the larger breaking balls and the pitchers do extra well with all their bite. And that's why those stats can even out a little bit sometimes. But the point is, getting out of this could be one of those change of scenery things. Pomeranz was doing great. Then he stalled in Colorado, which was a place very much not suited for his abilities. So is this the case where you get that young guy? And he's still young. He's only 25 years old. He's still very young. If you get him out of there and let him kind of start over, it sounds like his mechanics were out of whack. Everything was just wrong. Let him start fresh, get that breaking ball snapping again, and he might be able to rediscover what he had sort of lost or forgotten and pick up where he left off when he was in Cleveland. That's the best case scenario hope for the A's and for A's fans is he's going to find this curveball again because if he does, then they could have gotten a steal for 1 or 2 years of Brett Anderson. If they can get, you know, 5 years of what this guy was supposed to become, man, that would be a steal.
Yeah, I think he had bad luck. Colorado's a tough place. He's a ground ball pitcher, too. He was hanging that curveball, and they were kicking it into the seats and during the games that he did pitch. And I saw him pitch a couple times last year. But he does throw his fastball a little bit more often, and I think he's going to be a perfect addition in case something happens. You know, Phil Umber down there, he's another one who has that opportunity. He has that major league experience. Everyone knows what he can do. I'd be curious to see what he can do on an actual baseball team that is trying to win. Or I shouldn't say that. In an organization that's trying to win, not a team, because I can't say that the Houston Astros were trying to lose. But it should be interesting. The starting staff is good. I like the starting staff, Alex. I like these other fellas that are waiting in the wings. And I'm really excited for the Oakland A's. Alex, thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Hey, for sure. And we missed out on Arnold Leon, best known for inciting a brawl between Mexico and Canada during last year's WBC. He was stretched out as a starter last year. We'll see what happens.
We'll see. All right. That was Alex Hall. You can catch him over at athleticsnation.com. Coming up next, Mark Berman and I will talk New York Mets baseball. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Phil Nason Show will return.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
After these brief messages.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to philnasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at draftstreet.com today.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcasts.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcasts.net.
Are you looking to escape into lands full of fantasy, drama, and adventure? If you are, why not try author K. Metter's books? Their Journey Begins, Journey to Freedom, The Night of the Dixie Wilds, On Top of the Rainbow, and Transcendence will get you there. K. Metter's books are available as an ebook or in paperback, and you can find her at authorkmedor.com. That's authorkmedor.com.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well, no. I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Talk radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at brewtownsports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now, back to the Phil Nason Show.
What a dope. What a maroon.
What is this? What's going on here? What are you people doing here?
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The New York Mets have hit Port St. Lucie, and here to talk about all that and more, please welcome from bloggingmets.com, Mark Berman is in the house. How you doing, Mark? Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Always a pleasure to be here.
I like having you here. What's new with the Mets? Ike Davis, that was a new one. Ike Davis says he's a little bit shocked that he's returned with the New York Mets, and you know what? For once, I agree with him. I'm a little bit shocked, too.
I think we're all shocked. I mean, when a team openly talks about trading you, which the Mets did, I mean, they were these negotiations with the Brewers were pretty much public. Everyone was talking about it and using his name. When it gets to that point, a trade almost always happens, and it didn't for whatever reason. You know, Alderson didn't get what he wanted, I guess. I'm surprised to see this.
I'm definitely surprised. I was hoping that they would trade him. I don't think they're going to. I think it's probably more difficult than the Mets let on. You know, I think maybe teams wanted a little more for him than, or more than just him. But it looks like he and Lucas Duda are going to be vying for the first base starting job. And I don't like either one of those things. And they're giving this guy a lot of opportunities. Terry Collins has said that he wants Davis to get 90 to 100 at-bats during the spring training, which was double from last year, in order to guard against Davis having another slow start. They really want this kid to succeed, don't they?
Yeah, I think Alderson could have traded Davis if he wanted to, because I'm sure there are teams that were willing to take a chance on him, but they weren't willing to give up much for him. And why should they? I mean, here's a guy past 2 years has been awful. It's funny, everyone talks about, oh, he had 32 home runs 2 seasons ago. Well, he was still terrible early in the season. So I still count that as a bad year. But I think Alderson wanted a lot for a 26-year-old first baseman who has shown some potential, and no one wanted to give it to him. So Alderson's like, fine, we'll keep him. I was a big fan of getting rid of both Duda and Davis and just starting new. But if they didn't do that, given the choice between Davis and Duda, I would take Davis every day of the week. So hopefully Davis does well in spring training and wins the first base job, and Duda either sits on the bench or is sent to Vegas. I don't care what happens to him, but he's useless.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I think you listen to pro scouts, though, and they say Duda has a higher upside because he swings up and he hits the ball out of the park. I mean, he hits moonshots when he does hit him.
You know, if he does hit him. I think I'm not a sabermetrics guy. We've discussed that in the past. But the sabermetrics people love Duda because he walks. Big deal. So, yeah, maybe his advanced stats are better than Davis. But when you watch both of them on the field, there's no discussion. I mean, Duda is just not a good baseball player. And Davis, I think, has the potential to be good again. Whereas Duda, I don't think it's ever going to happen.
Maybe. I don't know. I'll tell you the other question mark for me is the shortstop issue. Sure. You've got Ruben Tejada. You've got Quintanilla there. What's going to happen with that? I mean, maybe they signed Stephen Drew after we recorded this, but I don't like the shortstop situation either.
No, the shortstop situation is awful. I mean, Tejada was just a nightmare last year, and Quintanilla filled in very admirably for Tejada last year, but he's just not that good a baseball player, and he shouldn't be a starter on any team. The Stephen Drew thing is interesting because now the Red Sox look like they're ready to move on, and there might be no one to sign Stephen Drew. So if he falls into the Mets' lap, I would still be surprised if it happens, because he's going to get at least $10 million, even if it's a one-year contract, and I don't think the Mets have $10 million to spend. They'd have to trade Davis to make that happen, and or Daniel Murphy, and I don't think the pay is to trade Murphy just so you can sign Drew, because I don't think Drew is any better than Murphy. But yeah, but the shortstop situation's a mess.
You know what? They either have to find someone who can hit or someone who can field, because the other two fellas, I guess Quintanilla is a better defensive shortstop than Tejada, but Tejada showed his signs that he could hit. And I think that they pulled the plug on this kid, considering what they're willing to do for Ike Davis. They pulled the plug on this kid pretty quick after a very good season where he was the starting shortstop from day one.
I think something was happening with Tejada last year. I mean, they talked about behavioral issues, and I don't know if that's code for something, but he was clearly not up to the task, I think, of playing baseball last year. You just remember the first week, he had like first 2 weeks, I think he had 6 errors the first 2 weeks of the season. Something was going on with him, and I don't know what it was, but the Mets know what it was, so maybe that's why they pulled the plug early. But apparently, they say he's straightened out. You know, he went to that conditioning camp. He's more focused now on playing. So it might not be the worst thing to give him a chance. Listen, the Mets aren't going to win this year, so why not see if you can develop this guy, and you can have an inexpensive, decent shortstop.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know, man. I'll tell you what, this is a mess, and it needs to be fixed. You've got two spots in the infield, two very serious positions, by the way. Necessary, well, they're all necessary, but it's vital to have a quality first baseman, especially in today's game.
Sure.
And we need a quality shortstop out there, too, and it just ain't happening. And this is what really irks me, because with all this talk about a lack of payroll restrictions, why in the world didn't they go out there and just get a shortstop? It is just beyond my any thought pattern that I could possibly have.
I agree. It's because there are payroll restrictions. It's because they don't want to raise the payroll. I mean, the payroll is going to be $80 million. They're opening the payroll is going to be $80 million, which means that the Wilpons can say all they want that the money problems are behind them, but they're not. Clearly, they're not. If they can sign Steven Drew right now for $10 million a year and have a $90 million payroll, and they won't do it, then something clearly is wrong with this team.
And they're making money over there, too. Don't let them fool you. They're making money, but something's up there. I don't know what it is. Maybe Freddie just doesn't want to spend any more money. That makes sense, I guess. But for me, we said this before. We'll say it probably in the entire season. This is a big market, and we expect you to spend. If you want my dollars, you have to put up your dollars.
Yep.
And they don't want to put up their dollars. They want to give us Las Vegas East, and I ain't buying it. And I don't think fans should either. And this is the problem, though. As long as people continue to come to the ballpark, they're going to traipse this nonsense out there. I mean, okay, they signed Curtis Granderson. Still, he's not going to be the savior. He's just not. Chris Young, he probably has the higher upside because he's younger.
I mean, I was all for Granderson signing because they needed someone, and I think he's going to be good. I would prefer a 3-year contract, but they needed to give the fourth year. And Chris Young, he's got upside. I mean, and it's a 1-year deal. If it doesn't work out, you just say goodbye after this year. It was a good signing. But think about if the Mets had $120 million payroll, which I think is reasonable for a New York team. That's another $40 million they could have spent on this team. Think about what they could have had. They could have had Steven Drew. They could have, you know, sign a closer. Sorry. So they could have been a good team if they spent like a New York team.
Absolutely. You know what? That's absolutely right. Instead, they brought in Jose Valverde. Okay, Kyle Farnsworth.
Right.
Because they're worried about Bobby Parnell, by the way. I guarantee you they're looking to hedge their bets, because something ain't right with Parnell either. It just doesn't look right. The whole situation kind of smells. But one thing that I do like is this bullpen. I think this bullpen might be pretty good this year.
Yeah, I've been saying it all offseason that I think it looks promising. Vic Black, it's funny they're talking about Vic Black as a possible closer when the guy's pitched, you know, 10 games in the majors. But he looks like he can easily be a setup guy and maybe a closer in the future. And the rest of the crew, Edgen was looking good till he got injured. Scott Rice looked decent. You know, good situational lefty. Familia is probably going to make the team. Gonzalez and Torres were, I mean, German and Torres were, you know, decent middle inning guys. I think the bullpen's going to be fine.
Absolutely. And if Valverde and Farnsworth can pan out, you know what? You might wind up with a closer by committee.
Yeah. I hope Parnell's going to be okay. Apparently he threw the other day for the first time and it went fine. But yeah, they're I mean, what did he have? A disc in his neck? Is that what it was?
Something like that.
You know, it doesn't sound like it's that serious, but maybe it's just more serious than the Mets let on.
Well, that's
good. More serious than I understand. I don't know.
Well, here's some positive. Well, we got about 2.5 minutes. Here's 3 minutes. Here's some positives for you. Dominic Smith's goal is to win a championship for the Mets and their fans. Dominic Smith is one of the hottest first base products, or prospects, I should say, in the entire minor leagues. A lot of people are talking about this kid, and he's only 18, and he is something. Boy.
Yeah, apparently he's... Yeah, I was shocked when they had him as the second-ranked first baseman of all of baseball, all of minors. I didn't realize he was that good. Apparently they were saying he was the best high school hitter in the draft last year. I hope the Mets fast-track this guy if he's that good. Like, there's no reason for him to spend 4 years in the minors if he is that good. Again, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but they have a history of not bringing guys up when they should be brought up. So if this guy is that good, let him speed through the minors. Let him be up by next season if he's that good.
Well, I'm all for it. I wanted to see Duda and Davis off they go. That's what I want to see. I don't want to see them again. I you know why? Because if they do what they did last year, you might as well stop talking about the Mets after Memorial Day weekend. We'll be like the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah.
You know, that we can get gung-ho for April and most of May, and then after that, nobody will be talking about them again. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see that. But I do like what they did with the bullpen. I think it's going to be okay. Matt Harvey's down there. He says he's got to slow down. That's okay. Matt, listen. You're banging hot chicks. That's all that matters. Have fun.
Yeah.
Enjoy your time while you're in New York, because you know that they're not going to pay you. And, well, win us a championship in 2015. That's what I'd like to see him do.
That'd be nice.
But it's not going to happen because the team around him is still terrible. And it will always be terrible.
They need to get, you know, like 3 or 4 new more hitters for the team to be good.
And that's just it. I was talking on Facebook with someone, and I was pretty honest about it. I said they need to build an organization if they're not going to spend money.
Yeah.
The problem is they don't want to do that. And when you don't want to do that, you can't build your team around free agents.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. And I don't care how hard you try. Great teams aren't built by nothing but free agents. You know, free agents are supposed to be the complement. Look at the 1986 Mets with Keith Hernandez and Gary Carter. Perfect additions to a great baseball team, man. And those young kids came up from the beginning. You know, that's what we want to see. The Mets don't have anything like that. Although their minor league system is ranked number 6 now.
Mm-hmm.
From 24 when Alderson did come, those guys are a long way off, and you need those position players. Because I don't know about you, Mark, but I don't rely on this pitching as much as maybe a lot of people do, because pitching is the most fragile position there is, man. There is no worse position there than a pitcher, or a catcher, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, every pitcher seems to get injured and miss a season at some point in their lives nowadays. So. Yep. It's going to happen. So you need good pitching, but you can't count it. You have to also be able to score runs.
Absolutely. Great stuff today, Mark. Thanks for being on the show with me. You can find Mark over at bloggingmets.com. Coming up next, Rush Olson and I will continue looking at the top pitching in Major League Baseball, the top pitching teams, I should say, of Major League Baseball. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return.
And it's the reason Al Gore invented the internet.
After these brief messages.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of Mets Musings, and I hope you'll join me each and every week as I recap all of the comings and goings-on in New York Mets baseball. I'll have guests on from all across Mets Nation giving their insights and analysis on the New York Mets. And you can follow me on Twitter at Mets Musings 1, as well as on Facebook. The group name is Mets Musings. So tune in weekly to the Mets Musings, available at MetsMusings.com, Stitcher.com, iTunes.com, iHeartRadio, and of course, BaseballTalkRadio.com, the home of great baseball talk shows.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well, no. I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You
yeah.
know what I mean, that's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby. That was great.
Are you a fan of historical fiction? If you are, then why not try author Mary Ann Bernal's The Briton and the Dane series of historical fiction novels? You can purchase these novels from her website at www.maryannebernal.com. That's www.maryannebernal.com.
Do you know your fantasy sports? Would you like to make money at it? DraftStreet.com and The Phil Nason Show would like to help you get started making money playing fantasy sports today. And we'll even give you the chance to get started making money today for free. On me. That's right. All you have to do is head on over to philnasons.com or visit the show notes for this show. Click the Draft Street image at the top of the page and start making money playing fantasy sports at draftstreet.com today.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now, back to the Phil Nason Show.
Now here it is, your moment of zen.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. Yesterday we talked starting pitching, and we didn't get through all the teams that we wanted to get through. We want to give you at least 10, 12 of the teams that we think are the best pitching staffs in Major League Baseball. And joining me once again from Rush Olson Creative and Sport, please welcome Rush Olson to the show. Rush, welcome back. How you doing, man?
I'm great. Good to be here, Phil.
It's great to have you here. You know, this pitching is very important. And one of the things, you know, when I was looking at my list and us talking off air, is that no one seems to have the American League West teams or their pitching staffs in their top 10s except for Texas. Why do you think that is?
Hard to say. It probably could be media attention focused on the East Coast. It could be that the division has been up and down with different teams excelling. It could be that the Angels had a bunch of big buzz the last couple of years and then fell off and folks forgot about it. You know, with Oakland and Seattle and especially Houston, they've been very under the radar, very much if they were going to do something good, it was going to be a surprise. So that could have something to do with it.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, that East Coast bias, and I found myself having the same thing, although I think Oakland has a pretty good staff, and I think Seattle might have a good staff. I know Texas does. Everyone knows Texas does. But then Texas is in Texas and not on the left coast, so maybe that has something to do with it too. But the New York Yankees, people are talking about this staff of CC Sabathia, Hiroki Kuroda, Masahiro Tanaka, Ivan Nova, David Phelps, Michael Pineda, and Adam Warren. I don't know. I think they're going to be all right. I don't know if they're going to be the world beaters as some people think they're going to be, but I think they're going to be all right.
I think this is potentially the most volatile staff in baseball, not from a temperament standpoint. I'm sure they're all nice, calm people. From a what the heck is going to happen, because I think it has the potential to be a very unpredictable staff. Sabathia, as we know, if he's at his best, can be tremendous. But last year, I think, created a lot of doubt as to whether he can be tremendous. Kuroda is not younger. We don't know anything about Tanaka in terms of how he will pitch in the United States. Pineda is coming off injuries. You don't know how he's going to bounce back. They lost Andy Pettit. They also lost, and this is not a starting pitcher, they also lost Mariano Rivera. And it weakens their bullpen. And while that's not a starting staff issue per se, I definitely think that bullpens factor into success of your starting staff. A good bullpen enables the manager to take the starter out, keep him fresh because he feels like the bullpen's going to do the job. A good bullpen, I think, gives starters confidence, especially when you've got young pitchers. If a young pitcher pitches a good game, the bullpen blows the save, I don't think that's good for his confidence. And so, obviously, the Yankees, the last several years, pretty much, if you got that ball to the ninth inning, you were winning the game. And so it'll be interesting to see how that bullpens factor into the effectiveness of the starting staff, not just for the Yankees, but for any team.
Oh, exactly. You know what else? CC Sabathia, have you seen him? He is slimmed down.
He has positioned himself to succeed. If his arm still has the necessary ingredients and he still has it, he will make it happen. He is clearly focused and wants to do it. But he, you know, you just have to hope that, for his sake, that the age factor has not caught up with him.
And that's just it. Kuroda's the same. So when you say volatile, you hit that nail right on the head repeatedly. That's a good call. You know, another staff that looks pretty good is the Boston Red Sox. John Lester, Clay Buchholz, John Lackey, Jake Peavy, Felix Dubront, Ryan Dempster, and Brandon Workman. This could be good, but I think Ryan Dempster is having some issues, right?
Yes, he's not going to pitch this year, the last I read, and that could be a problem. I think the Red Sox have a little bit of what the Yankees have in that some of their best pitchers are older, and that induces some volatility in terms of injuries. On one hand, older is good. You kind of know what to expect. You have the professionalism. You know how to prepare. On the other hand, it does create the possibility of more injuries. The Red Sox were relatively healthy last year, especially by the time they got to October. And the question is whether they will be so in a division that now shapes up to be even a little tougher with Baltimore having added some pitching.
Exactly. And you know what? Man, that's a crapshoot over there. Peavy, he's up there. Lackey, can he repeat what he did last year? Lester, the same. Clay Buchholz, it's going to be interesting for sure. And without Dempster, and I had to mention him anyway, but without Dempster, I don't know if they're a top 10 pitching staff, really, but we'll have to wait and see, right?
Indeed.
Because that is goofy. That really is. But we had to mention them because of what they did last season.
Totally. And Baltimore now signed Ubaldo Jimenez go with Chris Tillman, and they've got Bud Norris. They've also signed the gentleman out of Korea. They have suddenly added some depth to their staff that makes that division even more interesting.
That's true. And you know what else? There's a rumor that Irvin Santana may wind up throwing for the Orioles as well.
It's interesting with the draft pick compensation. now that they've gone ahead and gone all in to sign Ubaldo Jimenez, they have gone ahead and given up their first-round pick, which is the 17th overall. Now that they've done it, they don't have another first-round pick to lose. They're going to lose a second-round pick if they sign Santana. So in some ways, what they're giving up for Santana is now less than it would be for a lot of teams. Don't know if they'll go that way, but they could.
They had better, because that pitching staff is upside down anyway. That's what kills them, really. But I don't know, man. I'll tell you what. One team that I've got my money on is the St. Louis Cardinals. That pitching staff is incredible. There are some question marks there, though. You have Adam Wainwright, who's not a question mark. Shelby Miller, who had a great season last year. Michael Wacha, who took the world by storm in the second half of the season, or I should say in the postseason. Lance Lynn, Jaime Garcia, Joe Kelly, and Carlos Martinez. They've got a whip over there.
This is a staff with depth, especially getting Garcia back. They've got a nice blend of veteran presence and strong young arms. There's a lot to like about the Cardinals staff. They went to the World Series last year, too, so you could also make the case that some of these young people experience in tight situations that could benefit them this season.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you what. Michael Wacha is the wild card, though, because you don't know if what he did last season was a fluke, but we're about to find out. You know, we have about a month away till the regular season begins. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to see what St. Louis brings, because Wainwright, he could be a beast this year. I kind of predict him to win the Cy Young. I think he's going to sneak by Clayton Kershaw, but I could be wrong.
It's February. You're allowed to predict whatever you want, Phil.
Yeah, I tell you what. I 2 years ago? I had everyone. I had the Cardinals and the Tigers, and the Cardinals lost in the last game of the playoffs and destroyed me to the Giants, or I would have had my preseason complete. And the guy I was with on the show, he kept tweeting me saying, "Dude, you're about to pick the big duo." And I was like, ugh, don't say that. And then they blew it. But a team that I didn't have much hope for last season, and one of the reasons was I was nervous about their pitching staff, but I think they're going to have a bounce back year, are the Washington Nationals. Steven Strasburg, Jordan Zimmermann, who had a great first half, Gio Gonzalez, who had a very tough time last year trying to replicate what he did the previous season. They acquired Doug Fister. They have Ross Detweiler, Tanner Roark, and Nate Kearns. That's the potential for big trouble for the National League East.
You've got Strasburg, who at his best is a number one. You've got a whole bunch of guys that probably profile pretty well as number two to number three starters filling out that rotation. That's if those guys all get it going at the same time, that's a stout group.
It sure is, but, you know, I always go back to the year they shut Strasburg down. And had they not have done that, they may have won the World Series. They didn't come close last year, and who knows what will happen this year. But the guy I like on this staff is Jordan Zimmermann. He, like I said, he had a great first half, and then he kind of fell down to earth. But I like him a lot, and I like Gio Gonzalez's curveball. And I like Strasburg's strikeouts. Good staff, though.
Good staff, versatile staff.
And they've got a couple young guys who can fill in and roar Kearns and Jordan. So it should be quite interesting. That's Taylor Jordan. I didn't mention him before because I was talking about Jordan Zimmermann. I think I have a man crush.
You're allowed.
And last but not least, the Detroit Tigers. They have what I think is the best staff out there. They have the reigning Cy Young, Max Scherzer. They have Justin Verlander, who probably would have won it if it weren't for Scherzer. Mm-hmm. Anibal Sanchez, Rick Porcello, Drew Smyly, Jose Alvarez, and Robbie Ray. Good staff, eh?
Indeed. And we can say that even though they lost Doug Fister, who was a solid pitcher for them. They've got Sanchez, who might have put up the best numbers, or at least ERA-wise, of any pitcher on their staff, and And they the other thing that Detroit did this offseason is they improved their defense. They brought in Ian Kinsler to play second base. They're going to be better at shortstop. They're going to be better at first base because Cabrera should be better at first than he was at third. That will help Rick Porcello. It'll help every pitcher on their staff.
Yeah, because they've got a bunch of sinker ball pitchers. Doug Fister would have loved to pitch on this staff, but they sent him back, and I think that was a good trade because they wanted to move in Smiley, and they needed to do something. And they're not going to part with a kid like Sanchez, and they're not going to part with Verlander, obviously. And Scherzer, obviously, they want to try to re-sign him. So it only made sense to trade Doug Fister. But what Tiger fans are upset about is that they didn't get much for him. And I was saying to them, but no, it's going to be okay. You know, you picked up a nice draft pick or a nice prospect, and you've got Espinoza there. You're going to be okay.
I think the Tigers will be fine. They're also another one of those big market teams that's got a little money if they need to fix a problem during the season. Let's say Irvin Santana lasts till after the draft when there's no draft pick compensation attached to him. Tigers are one of those teams that could make a play for a guy like that.
Absolutely. And the points you made about them and their defense improvement is something that can't and shouldn't be overlooked because it's going to be really good. Their team ERA last season was 3.44. With a crappy infield. Oh, they were awful. I mean, but now look at what they've done. Cabrera, like you said, is going to play first a lot better. Now third base is up in the air right now. It looks like the young fellow Vinny Castellano will be the third baseman, and that's a good thing. This should be a really good baseball team. I'm looking forward to seeing the Tigers. That's my American League team, so I'm kind of happy because my National League team, well, they stink. But still in all, the Tigers are good. Is there anyone else out there that you think about when, in terms of pitching, that's been overlooked? Maybe we've overlooked them or the national media has overlooked them. Who would that be, you think?
Well, I'd almost say, and it's hard to believe based on the high profile they have, I almost have to say the Philadelphia Phillies. They've got Cliff Lee. They've got Cole Hamels at the top of a rotation, which can be very effective. And then they also just added A.J. Burnett. So A.J. Burnett has pitched in big games. He's pitched for the Pirates in their big run. And now they've added him. What they're going to need, it's going to be the end of that rotation to step up. And can Kyle Kendrick do it? Can Roberto Hernandez do it? Can the Cuban pitcher Miguel Gonzalez do it? That will be, I think, the key to Philadelphia.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. On Tuesday, we had the guy from Fightin' Phillies, Rich Baxter, on the show, and he was gushing about this pitching staff. And he, I think he liked the fact that they were overlooked because he said no one will see them coming, but we still have Cliff Lee and Cole Hamels. If those guys can stay healthy and have a bounce back season from last year, Kyle Kendrick pitches well again, and then they picked up A.J. Burnett, is that going to be a fluke, what he did in Pittsburgh? That could be deadly. That's a good call. I'm glad that you picked up on that because they definitely have a staff to look out for. Rush, great stuff the last 2 days. Thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome.
That was Rush Olson from Rush Olson Creative and Sport, and you can find him over at rusholson.com. And that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Nason Show. I want to thank the guys for making this a lot of fun to do this show. Tomorrow we're going to talk NBA basketball, Spurs, Oklahoma City Thunder, and the Golden State Warriors. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves, be good, and most importantly,
ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.
You've just listened to a pre-recorded edition of The Phil Nason Show. If you'd like to contact me, you can do so at philnasons.com. If you'd like to advertise, you can do the same. Contact me at philnasons.com. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening and see you next time.